David, through both his sufferings and celebrations, taught us to find God in the trials and tribulations of the human spirit, in the presence of God in our own lives. David taught us to see our own interiority as a sanctuary in miniature, as a tiny temple, that God can be close to us, that he can be reflected in the struggles and sacrifices of everyday life. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 140, The Kotel. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. When Menachem Begin arrived in the Holy Land, he watched the British strive to stop the Jews gathered in what was then the very narrow prayer space at the Western Wall from sounding the shofar at the conclusion of Yom Kippur. Begin later reflected, quote, "These stones are not silent. They do not cry out. They whisper. They speak softly of the house that once stood here, of kings who knelt here once in prayer, of prophets and seers who here declaimed their message, of heroes who fell here dying, and of how the great flame, at once destructive and illuminating, was here kindled. This was the house and this the country, which, with its seers and kings and fighters, was ours before the British were a nation, the testimony of these stones, sending out their light across the generations." End quote. It is a striking statement reflecting the fact that Jews gathered at the Kotel, at the foot of the Temple Mount, because of their love for and longing for what was atop the mount. It is only when we remember this that we can truly understand the story of the Kotel and what it teaches us. The Ottoman conquest of Jerusalem came in the year 1516 when the Mamluks were defeated by Selim the Grim, who in turn was succeeded by his son, Suleiman the Magnificent, in 1520. Simon Montefiore reports how, with this conquest, Jerusalem was ruled by the Ottoman Empire for hundreds of years, and he reflects how Suleiman's rule ended up impacting aspects of Jerusalem that we still know today. First and foremost, the walls of what is now called the Old City, walls that were built in the age of Suleiman. Montefiore writes, quote, "The walls look ancient, and to many people they define the city as much as dome, wall, or church. But they, and most of the gates, were the creation of this contemporary of Henry VIII, both to secure the city and add to his own prestige." End quote. There's a separate point to be made here, which is that the walls summon today our own sense of the old city, even though the walls leave out, do not surround, the original city of Jerusalem, the city south of the Temple Mount, the city conquered by David, the city called Ir David, David's city. What was placed within the walls and what was not was decided in the age of Suleiman, though Suleiman was not always happy with the choices that were made. Simon Goldhill, in his History of the Architecture of Jerusalem, records a story regarding the area known as Mount Zion, which is outside the city walls today. Writing of Suleiman and the walls of Jerusalem, Goldhill tells us, quote, "He began in the north in 1537 and the south wall was completed in 1540. There was a dispute, as ever, with building in Jerusalem. In this case, whether Mount Zion should be included within the boundary. The architects were uncertain that the expense of so much extra wall was worth it for one building, the cenacle, the room where Jesus was said to have had the Last Supper. Consequently, the walls were built excluding the hill. Suleiman was infuriated by their decision and had the architects put to death. The graves just inside the Jaffa Gate, said to be the graves of the architects, are nothing of the sort, just the memorials of two mildly distinguished citizens of a later date. But that's why the walls have the scope we know today." End quote. As we will see tomorrow, the reign of Suleiman betokened a special time for Judaism in the Holy Land, especially in the north when Sephardic Jews came to Safed, building a community that so profoundly impacted the future of Judaism itself. The reign of Suleiman did not mean a return of the Jews to the locus of their longing, to the Temple Mount. But, at least according to some historians, it was to the period of Suleiman's reign that we can trace the beginning of Jewish prayer at what is today a very famous site. Montefiore adds the following about the Jews of Jerusalem, quote, "They still prayed around the walls of the Temple Mount and on the slopes of the Mount of Olives, as well as in their main synagogue, the Ramban. But the Sultan favored order in all things. Discouraging anything that diminished the Islamic monopoly on the Temple Mount, he assigned the Jews a 9-foot street along the supporting wall of King Herod's temple for their prayers. This made some sense because it was adjacent to their old cave synagogue and next to the Jewish quarter where the Jews had to settle in the 14th century, and still the Jewish quarter today. But the site was overshadowed by the Islamic Maghrebi neighborhood. Jewish worship there was carefully regulated, and Jews were later required to have a permit to pray there at all. The Jews called this place HaKotel, the wall, Outsiders called it the Western or Wailing Wall, and henceforth its golden ashlar stones became the symbol of Jerusalem and the focus of holiness. End quote. What this means, then, is that there was no inherent holiness in the Kotel, beyond that of any other part of ancient Jerusalem. The wall was a retaining wall, part of the Temple Mount Plaza created by Herod. What sanctified it was the prayers that Jews poured out there. It was made holy by the Jewish longing that was expressed there. Jewish longing for the temple itself. Jewish longing for the Temple Mount itself. Expressed at this place where they were permitted to pray, so that the stones of the Western retaining wall became saturated with Jewish love. This, in the end, is the source of its special nature. Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik once reflected that the temple envisioned by David, in which human beings could experience a closeness to the divine, was meant to be a physical embodiment in building form of the original site where closeness to the divine is experienced, which is in our own lives, for the human spirit can sense divine closeness. Rabbi Soloveitchik put it this way in Yiddish. He said, "Dem Rebbeinu Shalom's Ma'ein, the dwelling place of the Holy One, blessed be He, is kishafen geworden jener mysteriösen Freitag, was created on that mysterious Friday," by which he means on the original sixth day of creation. "Wenn der Mensch ist erschienen in der Welt," when man was first brought into being in this world. And Rabbi Soloveitchik added that, "Das Beis Hamikdash ist alt," the temple, meaning the original temple, is ancient. "Aze alt wie der Mensch allein," as old as humanity itself. The human being is the first temple, for God is to be found first and foremost in his closeness with mankind, in the closeness that is found in the faith within our own souls. According to this interpretation, David's dream of a temple in which God was to be found was meant to inspire us to then find the light of God in our own little world. And this perhaps is why it was David that would design the temple. For David himself, as we have argued before in other podcasts, more than anyone else revealed in his life and his Psalms the sanctity and the passion and the longing that lies inside the human soul. As the writer Thomas Cahill wrote, quote, "The Psalms are a treasure trove of personal emotions and a unique early roadmap to the inner spirit, previously mute, of ancient humanity. Whereas the historian must normally guess at the emotions of his subjects from incomplete or indirect evidence, David's Psalms reassure us that 3,000 years ago, people laughed and cried, just as we do, bled and cursed, danced and leapt, that our whole repertoire of emotions was theirs," end quote. This is absolutely correct, and to this we might add that every one of the Psalms of David, the Psalms that run the gamut of the human spirit, is addressed to God, because there was no part of David's life, no part of his failures or achievements, in which David is not sustained, strengthened by his sensing of God's presence. Thus David, through both his sufferings and celebrations, taught us to find God in the trials and tribulations of the human spirit, in the presence of God in our own lives. David taught us to see our own interiority as a sanctuary in miniature, as a tiny temple, that God can be close to us, that he can be reflected in the struggles and sacrifices of everyday life. If this is the case, then we can argue that it was the sanctity of the soul that was poured out in longing by Jews at the Kotel. It was the sanctity of the soul that sanctified the stones of the Western Wall of the Temple Mount Plaza. And just as David's own soul, David's own life, was defined by a longing for the actual temple, so too was the Western Wall, the area where Jews gathered to express their mourning for the temple's destruction and their longing for its restoration. One must therefore be careful in describing the site of the Western Wall, because it is not, as is sometimes said, the last remaining wall of the temple. It is a retaining wall, and at least parts of the Eastern Wall of the plaza are older than the Western Wall. And the Western Wall is certainly not Judaism's holiest site. That, of course, is the site of the temple itself atop the mount. Simon Goldhill, in his book on Jerusalem, reflected accurately as follows, quote, "Centuries of prayer and longing do invest the place with sanctity, and understanding the history of the site does not undermine that sanctity, nor does it challenge the power and significance of the feelings it excites. The Kotel is not a fragment of the temple, and it does not need such false hype to inspire awe or to seem important. Its own history and its evocative place in the imagination of a scattered and oppressed and threatened people is stirring enough," end quote. Thrice daily, Jews pray for the restoration of sacred service to Jerusalem's Temple Mount itself. That is Judaism's most holy site. It is toward that location that all Jewish prayers have been poured out since the temple was destroyed. We have also seen throughout this series how since 70 CE, Jews, over the centuries, sought to gain a closeness to the mount, doing what they can to get close to the locus of their longing. The Kotel, the retaining wall of the Temple Plaza from the Rhodian Age, acquired its special status because it was the site where Jews were allowed by the Ottomans to gather to express their yearning for the temple itself. The Kotel, in other words, is the place where Jews for centuries gathered to affirm that the Temple Mount is Judaism's holiest site. They gathered there because, to paraphrase Menachem Begin's words, there they listened for the whisper of the house of God that once sat on the mount over Jerusalem's most sacred space. And it is therefore at the Western Wall that we can also hear the whispers of Jewish longing for the temple atop the mount itself. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.